Welcome to Women in Politics. Chelsea and I are here today, and today we have our first ever Republican candidate guest. So we're welcome Shion Fenty here. Thank you so much for coming. And we have some members of the community representing both sides of the political ticket. That is Megan Barbetto, Jacqueline Simmons, and Melvina Goodman. So thanks everybody for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, welcome. Okay, guys. So we're here today to just have a conversation about what's going on with women on both sides of the aisle. So it's great to have women here ready to talk. And we've had a lovely intro conversation before the show, and we're ready to just put it all on the table. So I'd like to allow Ms. Shion Fenty to open up and talk a little bit about her race that's coming up, how she got here, and how she became to get on the Republican ticket.
Definitely. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's really awesome to be here. So the decision to run for Congress really started over a year ago when I was helping out with our church. We do a lot with foster care kids. And so we host a camp for them in which they come. They have an entire week of just fun to get away from sometimes from the hard lives that they live. But beforehand, we do 2.5 months of training on what to expect from these kids, what it looks like. We study how their lives affects their brain. And so most of these kids, they're always in a fight or flight mode. So whenever they're in their schools and they're trying to be educated, they're always so amped up. They're always so afraid. So when you're sitting there and you're trying to learn your math or your ABCs or how to do something that requires the left or the right side of your brain, they can't focus on that. And so after we had the camp, I was able to watch these kids come in, and their eyes were just so dark, and they were very skeptical of everything that was happening. But at the end of the week, it was like this bright light was in their eyes, and they kind of, it looked like they felt good about life. And so then afterwards, I began to mentor the two girls that I had in my cabins. And then when I got to their schools to see how they were doing and to see how everything was going, it was very clear to me as to why we have about 20 of some of the failing schools that are in our district, why they weren't doing so well. And it's, now we cannot say that it's a teacher's fault. Teachers work so hard. They are doing so much and they're doing all that they can do. But you have to look at the situations that these kids are also coming from. If they don't know when they go home if their mom is going to be there, or maybe someone's incarcerated, or if they're coming home to chaos, they can't function. They can't focus in these schools. So as we were going through the schools that my girls go to and seeing what can I do, how can I be of a help in this community, I just started knocking on doors, calling up people, saying, what can we do here? And of course, there's a very fine line with how much you can volunteer when you don't have a child in the system or in the school there. So I said, well, that's fine. We'll just start some after-school programs for these kids. And then again, finding ones that were really going to help out was kind of hard as well, too. But they are out there. They're there. There's so many people that care about our kids. But as I began to look at what is the future going to look like for kids now? What is the future going to look like for these kids that are in this situation? Not only foster care kids, but kids that go to those schools. I just looked at it and I was like, you know what? We've got to begin to support our school systems. We've got to begin to support our states. We've got to begin to support our community. But how can this be done? So as the opportunity came about to run for this office, I began to really beginning to do something that I don't think a lot of people do. A lot of people do not understand the powers that federal government has versus the powers that the state has. When it comes to schools and education, that is a state power. They are over that jurisdiction. The federal government does not have the power to overstep the state to do anything there. So as I realized that in running in a federal race when it comes to education, that we really don't have that authority over there, then I'm like, then what can we do as federal officials? I firmly believe that government and the community must work together in order to accomplish any kind of goal. And I feel like our society, we separate responsibilities. Well, it's the government's job to do this. It's the government's job to do that. No, it's not. It's our job to take our community back into our own hands and begin to produce the kind of people and the education system that we want. So I feel like as a representative, and coming from my background, my parents are immigrants to this country. And when they came here, I was born 2 months later. We grew up on the public assistance. We grew up in Brooklyn, New York, in the hood, in the ghettos, and everything that we did. And everything that we did was we owned businesses. We worked. Like, I cleaned houses for a very long time. And nothing that we did was to ever we never felt like anything was owed to us, I would say. We just knew when we came to this country, we had to work hard to get to where we have to go. And I feel like as I'm going through this district and I'm seeing the things that people are doing that are wonderful and the things that aren't so wonderful, I feel like it's my opportunity now to use my history, use my experience, use my background to bring life and to bring health to this community. There's so many people, and with my mom also being a single mom raising seven kids, it's like my mother taught us, if you want some money, you better start a business. If you want something, you better go get it. So I was raised by a mother who killed it every day, every single day. So my compassion.
Women.
Yeah, seriously. And so my compassion just goes out to when I see single moms all over, not only in the inner city. Let's be really real about that. It's not only the single moms are all across this district. And when they are raising their kids, they have a full-time job. They're doing all that they can to help their kids and to provide an environment that's safe for them. I love it when I see single moms say, well, I'm going to go back to school or I want to start a business. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to help you with that. Let's
That's
do this,
awesome.
Girl. So,
that's awesome.
This is a lot. So.
So you talked about the across your district, the need for that. So tell us a little bit about where your district encompasses. What exactly is the 4th Congressional District?
Yeah, the 4th District is amazingly large. So it's I will say it starts all the way up from U of R, so it's all of Richmond. Then it goes all the way down to Chesapeake and then all the way over to Petersburg, Waverly, Isle of Wight, all the way down to Chesterfield to the border of Carolina, some parts of Henrico as well, too. So it is a massive, massive district between 690,000 to 750,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great. If you're just tuning in, this is Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Today we have Cheyenne Finty, Melvina Goodman, Jacqueline Simon, and Megan Barbato. This is Chelsea Higgs-Wise with Carol Olson, and back to our show. So at the ladies at this table, I know I am in the 4th Congressional District. Melvina, you in there?
I am, because I live in the U of R area.
Yeah.
Nice. And Melvina also was putting her hand up saying, yes, Brooklyn.
I'm a Brooklyn girl.
yes. So that's coming from the same, growing up in the same area with different perspectives, especially of women of color. That's always interesting to have a great conversation about that. What about you, Jackie? Are you in the 4th Congressional District?
You know, honestly, I don't know. I'm out in a Shore Pump.
Okay. And that's a real...
It's hard to say. Right. Yeah. So I think
we're right on the line.
On the line. Yeah. So you might be in the.
Who's
seven,
your current congressperson? Is it Dave Bratt?
It is.
Okay. Yep, you're in the seventh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm in the fourth. So I live in Highland Park, and I am a middle class white lady living in a predominantly African American community. So I have a completely different perspective on a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I have a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old who will be going to one of the schools that you mentioned that don't have great support. But my son started preschool this year, and he is currently enrolled in one of the city's VPI program schools, in one of their preschools. And then next year he would be going to Overby Shepherd. And I've met with the principal of that school already just to introduce myself and say, hey, we're here. We've lived in this community since 2005. We're committed to this. And so everything that you are saying about education is hitting all of my buttons, even though I'm traditionally on the other side. I've tended to vote on the other side. So,
and I think that's something that we're going to find. And I think it's amazing that once we begin to actually have the conversation with each other, we will truly see that we really are on the same side. It's just we have different ways of getting there. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that I try to do a lot, even though I post a lot of things on my social media, on Facebook, I try to engage people in conversations. Because one thing that it really breaks my heart to see that how media portrays anything that they don't like, they begin to... You kind of demonize the other side that you don't believe in. And then when you begin to do that, you make sure the other person, they're no longer people. They're now a thing. And if something is a thing, then you don't care what you say or do to that about that person. So to me, it's like I'm a person, I vote by what I believe is right for the moment, what I believe is going to do good for the country. So to begin here, to sit here, yes, I'm a Republican and this is how I'm going to, this is my platform. A lot of people are a little bit confused because they go, well, a lot of your platforms are things that Democrats care about. I'm just like, are you kidding me right now? My platforms are things that everyone cares about. Everyone cares about business, education, immigration, all these things. But we have to have a conversation to see that, hey, we actually really do have the same viewpoints on these things.
Right. So before we dive into that, I want to encourage all the listeners to look up and see what congressional district you are in. To, you know, someone to say, I don't really know is not uncommon, and no one should be ashamed about that. Absolutely. That's why we're having this conversation right now. The fourth congressional district representative right now is Donald McEachin. So if that rings a bell for you, just look that up. Look up when that election is coming. So everyone take this opportunity to start understanding the different districts and how Virginia is sliced up into so many different areas and how these elections work, because that's important to understand the difference between the Senate, Congress, these sort of things. So thank you so much, Cheyenne, for talking about that and everyone being open and honest, especially Jackie saying, I'm not really sure, because that happens. Truly, that's real with that. So coming back to what Cheyenne was saying a little bit, it's interesting that you talk about, hey, we're all on the same side but taking different approaches. So could you give an example of what makes you different than a Democratic approach traditionally? What's something that you would say, this is why I chose the Republican ticket versus going with the Democrats?
Definitely. So I chose to vote to run on this as a Republican ticket because the main thing is I definitely believe in a free market. Not to say that Democrats don't, but the free market really does. Well, let me back up and say this. So when most people hear that you're a Republican, they think that you're greedy, that all you want is money, and that that's all that you care about. You just want to fill the pockets of the 1% and all that kind of stuff. And that just doesn't make any sense to me, quite frankly, because I'm not the 1%. So that just doesn't make any sense. And so be running on this ticket, because I definitely believe in a free market. I believe that if we do not have a healthy economy, there's no way any of us can grow any of our aspirations or our dreams to do that. And so why I did not and cannot vote on the Democratic side. The Democratic Party has definitely changed from what I knew it to be. I'm only 37. I was born in the 80s, and so I wasn't even really allowed to vote until, you know, kind of recently in my life anyway. And so, and I feel my perspective way back then was, we're all really the same. We just have different ways of thinking about things. It seems like the Republicans back in the day, they just wanted to make sure that business was good, and the Democrats wanted to make sure that the poor were taken care of. Well, that's great. Let's just put those views together and handle that. And then now everything seems like it is just so divided. And so I'm just like, these are not the parties that I grew up with. This, I don't understand where all this craziness is coming from. But more specifically, why I just could not run with the Democratic Party is that Democrats definitely believe in abortion and in the and with Planned Parenthood. And everyone knows that historically Planned Parenthood was started by a racist woman who her motive was just to kill black people and people of color. And so I just can't. I can't roll with that. I can't roll with that at all. And to me, it's just like they say it's a woman's choice for her body and it's a woman's choice for this. I just feel like that's just good marketing. Women have always had choices over their bodies and what they're doing. I can see if you're in a situation where there's rape, there's incest, there's murder, like crazy stuff is happening. Like, you need rescue. You know what I mean? Like, you need care. You need to be able to have access to whatever it is you have access to. But simply for the fact that her main motive was to wipe out people of color, to me, that's racial genocide, and I just can't support that.
If you're just tuning in, this is Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Today we have Cheyenne Finty, Melvina Goodman, Jacqueline Simmons, and Megan Barbato. This is Chelsea Higgs-Wise with Carol Olson, and back to our show. Okay, so let's talk about that a little bit bring some other folks in, because that's interesting about her waiting, taking the weight of the history of Planned Parenthood and saying that's why she can't stand on that, when, you know, Confederacy history was genocide against African Americans and slaves, and Confederacy was against that. So our entire American history was with that piece. So I'd like to bring some other people in the conversation about what historical messages have been sent, whether that's the feminist messages, whether that's the Republican messages, the conservative messages that have influenced your vote today?
That's a tough question. So this is Megan. And as I mentioned before, I'm a middle class white lady. And I believe in a woman's right to choose. Okay. I believe that that is the right thing to do. I have personally had to terminate a pregnancy. So it was for medical reasons, mm-hmm. and it saved my life. If I had continued that pregnancy, it would have probably killed me. Mm-hmm. And so when you lay it out in the very basics, do I want to kill a potential child? Like, who would say yes to that?
Right.
So, but when it gets down to being medically necessary and having the freedom to have that conversation with my doctor, and for this to be the right decision for me to make at that time, that's a choice that I needed to make, mm-hmm. so that I could go on to have the two beautiful children that I have now. So it is fine with me to have a conversation where we talk about what our boundaries are for having abortion access. Mm-hmm. Like, let's talk about those boundaries. But it seems like every time you get into that conversation, it just comes down to a binary choice. It either is always allowable or it is always not. And if I had not had access to it, I could be dead.
Right. So does that historical context that Planned Parenthood was started to potentially kill black babies, is that something that you would say I can't associate with that because of the access that it creates now? Do you see a transformation in that type of access of care from an agency like Planned Parenthood?
So I fully admit that I do not know the full history of Planned Parenthood. I don't know why and how it was started.
Right.
So I don't want to talk on a subject that I'm not sure. fully versed on.
Well, I'll jump in and let you know that there is a narrative that is there, and Planned Parenthood is very open about talking about how it was started, who it was started with, and their current journey on being more inclusive with women of color. So that sort of narrative is not something that Planned Parenthood would outright deny. Just like America can't outright deny how they've treated people of color, period.
Yeah, I mean, like, I would be willing to bet most of the stuff that's going on in the world, like in our country today, if it has existed for longer than 50 years, it has a racist background. Like, that's just the culture that it came up in. So I will not deny it, and I will not object to it. I think that's status quo. I think if you go back to the 20s, you had anti-Semitism as a regular thing that just appeared everywhere. And if you go back and you look at the pop cultural references from back then, they are intolerable as a human being looking at things today. So I fully respect that that is an untenable way to treat people. But you have to account for people's willingness to, for lack of a better way, to get woke. Like, even in my own conversations with people, the way that I talk to people has changed over the past 2-3 years. Cishet was not anything that I could drop into a conversation and feel comfortable with.
Megan, tell us what cishet is.
So cishet, C-I-S-H-E-T, stands for cisgendered heterosexual. And that means that you identify with the gender that you were assigned at birth. So if your birth certificate says male or female, you're like, yep, that's me, absolutely. And that you are attracted to members of the opposite sex. So if you feel that you are transgendered, or if you are homosexual or bisexual, if you're genderqueer, if you're asexual, you would not be cishet. I don't even know what the number is. 80% of us probably are cishet, and that's just what we go with. But I could not have said that with
It's less than that, but...
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I absolutely believe that it's less than that. I pulled that number out of thin air. Nobody quote me. So
your language has changed.
My language has changed. And so I fully believe, thank you, that Planned Parenthood has changed their approach, and that they have, their approach to women of color, their approach to women's health has changed. It's not like their job in life is to provide abortions to everyone. Their job in life is to provide healthcare. Men go to Planned Parenthood to get physicals.
Yes.
So it's not about women showing up every single day and just like, I'm here for my daily abortion. That's not how it works.
Okay, so let's talking a little bit more about historical context and how we feel about where we fall with women and that sort of thing. Jackie, anything that you kind of want to add to the conversation? I see you sitting there shaking your head a little bit, smiling.
I am just tickled to death that I've learned what cishet means, because
that's what we're here for. Education. WRIR. If you're just tuning in, this is Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. Today we have Cheyenne Finty, Melvina Goodman, Jacqueline Simon, and Megan Barbato. This is Chelsea Higgs Wise with Carol Olson, and back to our show.
But it bothers me. It rubs me the wrong way. And I guess that I should declare that I am a white woman, that I'm Jewish, that, you know, I'm not privileged, but I'm not hurting for anything. But, you know, I identify and vote Republican simply because when I watch and listen and learn to the Democratic platforms, it's all about labels. And I am not about labels at all. You know, most of my friends who will hear this at some point know that my very closest circle to me are a rainbow of color, a rainbow of gender preference, a rainbow of faiths. But I hate the labeling. I hate it. I just think it's so divisive. And I know it's helpful for some people to have that dialogue or to have that vocabulary, but, you know, I just live my life meeting one person at a time and trying to meet them where they are, help them if I can. And, you know, I don't like the marches. I don't like the single topic is going to decide my vote approach. I just think it's very limiting. And you know, those who feel that they are victims is probably the most difficult connection for me to make, because I think women are in a time when we are empowered to do what we want. I'm very excited about the candidate, you know, to my right. And I just find the labels difficult.
So what I'm hearing from the two women at the table that identify with the Republican side is that Cheyenne was saying that she didn't understand what was going on with the big fuss of everyone was getting so upset about what was going on in social media and the labels. And Jackie was just, again, bringing up the labels and it being a divisive tool. From the other ladies, Melvina, we haven't heard you too much. I'm going to bring you in, Ms. Brooklyn. How do you feel about labeling, about declaring who you are, about your identity? What does that do for you?
So I'm one that I don't like labels.
Okay.
No type of label. Not titles, not whether I'm Democratic or Republican, whether I'm Christian, none of that, because I don't really think that defines who I am or what I believe. So when it comes to politics, I've considered myself to be independent. So I want to be a free thinker, and I want to decide who I want to vote for, despite pledging allegiance to a party. I think it's pledging allegiance to ideals. Like, does these ideals meet with what I want to see the world be and become? And I was surprised because my mother told me some years ago, this is like 20 years ago, that she's a Republican. And I looked at her like, what? She said, yeah, because the Republican Party used to be the Democratic Party.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
They switched sides some years ago. So my mom is 91.
In the 60s, that's
what
happened.
Yeah, she's 91 years old. Mm-hmm. So.
What happened in the 60s that made them switch, y'all?
I think it was just an evolution, but probably civil rights.
I think
it was partially that. So African Americans were Republicans to begin with. And then in the 60s, a huge racist party got in, and basically they were like, no, we're going to side with the land owners, the slave owners, so that basically saying we will ignore the blacks in our party so that we can pander to your money. And that's when the blacks were like, oh, wait a minute, so you're not going to listen to us? You're going to let racism get in? And they switched sides to becoming Democrats.
So that, honestly, I feel like that message is still pretty relevant today. That from many Republicans of color, I mean Republicans of Democrats of color, that's how we feel about the Republican Party, that it is sided with the racist, sided with money. And so what Melvina was saying, we were looking around of who's speaking up for who, where we are. And so we were free thinkers in the 60s as well. And it was like, okay, well, this is our shift for the vote. So we have to go to the party that is now speaking our name. And they were speaking their name by labeling people, by saying African American. So that way people knew, oh, this is the party for me. They're speaking to my ideals. And they wouldn't have been able to do that without labeling them African Americans. But I cut off Melvina just because she was talking about the idea of submitting yourself to a certain party, because any day those ideals could change, and therefore maybe even how we vote can change. So,
but also people get to judge you by what they think you believe, and so then you're treated as other. And I think that's what Cheyenne was saying, that you get treated as other if you believe what the status, you know, what if it's not what's in style, then we're gonna put you over there. So you're not appreciated for just being, I'm Melvina, and I believe what I believe. Like, can you just embrace me for who I am? And if we agree that the school system needs to change, regardless of what I believe, can we work on that together?
This wraps up part one of Women in Politics, produced in the studios of WRIR LP 97.3 FM. Join Carol and I next week at noon for part two of our group discussion with Republican candidate Sean Finty. See you next week.